Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment, food as sport, food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me.
I hate to ask you to do anything, but if you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to like, subscribe, rate, review, all of the above on whatever app you're getting it from. American Glutton is brought to you by Trifecta. Maintenance has been the most important aspect of weight loss for me, and nothing has helped me more in that department than Trifecta. Visit Trifecta.com today to find out why they're the best at what they do. My guest today is Trey Pinella. I had the pleasure of working with Trey on a movie called Dog, which is out in theaters now. Trey is a former private military contractor and special operations veteran, and now he is a personal trainer in the San Diego area, and he specializes in women's derrieres. Trey Pinella, welcome to the American Glutton Podcast.
Hey, Ethan. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for doing this, dude.
Yeah, absolutely.
We worked on a movie called Dog, which is at this when this comes out on Monday, Dog is out. People should go see Dog. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to talk to you about fitness and stuff because you're deep in that space.
I am deep in that space. It's been a big part of my life. And actually being a dog handler, we can get more into that. Fitness has always been intertwined with what I've been doing professionally and my passion. So it's been an amazing journey, honestly.
And I saw a picture of you on Instagram at 12 years old. You were a chubby kid.
Oh, I was thick. I was a thick boy.
I don't know. My kids sometimes tell me, people say I'm thick, and I'm like, is that an insult? Is that not an insult? But that's like the nice way to say it, right?
You know what? I was overweight. I was born in Virginia, and my parents believed in buying 30 racks of Mountain Dew and macaroni and cheese and hot dogs was a common dinner. And then until I moved to Colorado when I was like 5, 6, I still had that diet. And I was like, oh, this is a fit state. I can't be eating like this. But yeah, I was a pretty thick kid. So thick when I played football, they made me wear patches on my uniform. So I wasn't allowed to carry the football. I was too big. They wouldn't allow me to carry the football when I was younger.
Meaning like if you were like in the game, what does that mean? Like you can't have the football because you're too hard to tackle because you're large?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Wow. So welcome to probably California, Colorado, New York rules. We're like, oh, that kid weighs this. He's 110 pounds and he's 9 years old. He's not allowed to carry the football. Let's mark him. Let's put these giant white circle patches on his shoulders So everybody knows that that guy's not allowed to carry the ball.
But you're allowed to tackle people.
I was allowed to tackle people, correct.
I feel like honestly, it should have gone the other way. Like, you should have been the one carrying the football, but not allowed to tackle people.
Yeah, you know what? That makes a little more sense. What doesn't make sense is that I didn't stay the big kid. And so I played youth football for like 10 years. Once I got to high school, I lost a lot of weight. And I was not that kid anymore. And I was like, oh, I don't know how to play anything besides offensive line, but I'm still 120 pounds because that didn't change. I got taller and leaner. And that pretty much ended my football career just because of that start.
Yeah. Did your diet change in that time? Or did you become like thoughtful about nutrition?
So here's the crazy part, Ethan, is my mom actually competed in bodybuilding and was in very in health and fitness. So it's kind of confusing why she started me off at a young age about that diet. She claims she always knew I was going to just grow into it, right? I don't appreciate that at this age, but she's like, oh, you'll just grow into it. And yeah, when I got to high school, I was like, dude, I don't want to be the chubby kid who can't carry the football anymore. So honestly, I just was like, I just started skateboarding all the time, just started being more active, stopped chugging two Mountain Dews with every meal. And I started just at a younger age, being like, this is something I can change now rather than just continue this going into being an adult.
Yeah. I mean, that's amazing. I sit and think about all of this stuff, and especially on the macro, like the whole country and what nutrition looks like. And I do think for a lot of people, soda is how they hydrate, you know? And like, I go, is that something that they're making a real conscious choice of, like a smoker? If there is a person smoking today, and I got to be honest with you, I don't smoke, but I'm often envious of people smoking cigarettes. I don't think the same kind of rationale is going into soda, because we haven't gotten that big black box warning. Like, look, if you overdo this, there are these negative consequences.
Right. Where's the Surgeon General warning at on the sodas and everything? Right. You still can get the 64 ounce big gulps at 7-Eleven and stuff and drink them all day. Yeah. And I mean, just as far as education wise, I mean, there was none. I don't know if there currently is, but growing up, there was no education on it. My education was, I got picked on. That was my education about eating better, is that I didn't want to get picked on anymore. I wanted to be, hey, I want the girls to be into me. I started to come of age. It's like, I want the girls to be into me. They're definitely not into this. So that was my education on soda and fast food, was middle school, elementary school bullies. And I think, yeah, we haven't had that black box, the Surgeon General warning on it. And we honestly, I don't think have a lot of true education on it when we're younger.
Yeah, I guess it falls into, like, there's such weird nuanced technicalities, like the clinical definition of addiction. I don't think it's possible to become addicted to sugar in those terms. I think you can overdo something compulsively, but like how they define addiction with nicotine is very different than how they define addiction with sugar. So I don't know that we ever get there. However, a lot of people die from heart disease in America. Heart disease is obviously tied to obesity. And then if you look at the standard diet, I think there is a lot of Mountain Dew being drunk. So I would not be offended by a Surgeon General's warning on soda.
I wouldn't be either, but would that necessarily change anything? I don't know. I think it's not an addiction, like you said, like with cigarettes and with other things. I think it's just habitual that you get, like, for me, I had it growing up. So that's just what I drank with every meal. And I just had the mentality of, I didn't want to like physically look like this. And I wanted to feel like all the cool kids, popular kids who were getting girls. That's what I kind of like that was my, you know, warning or heads up of how to change my diet. But a lot of people don't think like that, right? And I think it just becomes habitual, and you take that on to your adult life, and it just becomes an unhealthy habit that you're just used to doing. And just something as simple as cutting out soda can make a huge difference in your and your health. And I really just think it's just people aren't very educated on it. And I think it does come from your childhood and just carry on into your adulthood, is like your health habits, right? And it's much easier to develop health habits when you're younger to carry on to when you're older than trying to change them after 2, 3, 4 decades of doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the key. It's also really strange because when we're talking about little kids, that is the point where like adults have utter control, right?
Right.
Like, they're not making decisions on their own. No baby is drinking Mountain Dew. You know, without a parent actually figuring out how to give it to them. So that is really the way. So you were in the military, by the time you got to the military, you were an athlete, and there was no, like, I got a crash diet to get through PT or anything like that.
Right. No. So, I mean, I started like serious lifting and prepping. So I always backtracked a little bit. So I always thought I would probably go into the military. So school wasn't like a huge thing for me. I was like, I'm not going to college. All school was for me is preparation for college. So I didn't really care about that. So I really started getting into fitness when I was like 16, 17, hitting the gym. Cause I knew that's what I ended up wanting to do. Right. When I ran around 18, going to the military, but I wanted to be prepared. I was born in Virginia Beach. So my godfather, and a lot of family friends, Navy SEALs, SEAL Team 6 guys. So I always knew like, that's kind of like the route, like I want to go, some sort of special operations. And sad news for me, can't swim very well. So Navy SEAL was kind of out for me. So I did a lot of research and I found Ranger, which is what I was in the military and what the movie Dog is kind of based off of, is Ranger Regiment and the Rangers. And I realized that I have to be top level physical fitness. And for a while, when I started really getting serious, all my education was going to the gym and watching guys who have good physiques. They look good, right? I didn't know exactly what I was doing. YouTube wasn't huge in 2006 and stuff like that. So 2005, it wasn't really even a thing. So I really just, my education on it was going and looking at physiques. And I got into like bodybuilding regimens, which, you know, going into the military wasn't exactly what you want to do. But I, you know, when I got there, when I enlisted, went in, I realized that at least I was more physically fit and prepared mentally and physically for the challenges ahead, just based upon the mentality I had going in.
Yeah, I think about that what you're talking about there aspect a lot, because I currently work out basically like a bodybuilder. That's the way I just really enjoy it. I like taxing one big muscle group at a time and then letting it recover and taxing it a little bit harder. But for something like the military, for real world application, if you're going to be active like that, is CrossFit a better go-to? Like for me, CrossFit's not good because I'm an old man who weighed way too much for way too long. So I have knee problems and feet right. problems and lower, but so CrossFit for me is like just injury central. But for a young person, is that the style of workout that you would say, like, if you're going into the military, do X?
Yeah. So young people, this is the thing with CrossFit, like you said, injury prone. A lot of CrossFit is the most dangerous movements you can do, as fast as you can do them, as heaviest way you can do them. So young people, inexperienced people, people who haven't practiced form for years and years, I would say no, right? That's not. The biggest thing, cardio and carrying heavy weight. Because in the end of the day, that's what you're going to be doing. You're going to be moving a lot of weight over a lot of distance. You're going to be carrying, you can carry calves, weights, anything like that. So really, CrossFit, at a younger age, no, just because of the injury prone thing. My big thing was cardio and putting something heavy on your back and moving it. So pretty far from, you know, your conventional styles of training. Like, you do a little bit of that in CrossFit with like sled drags and stuff like that, which is beneficial. But really prepping yourself for a special operations kind of unit is unlike any other other training you should be doing, right? It's not conventional by any means. Even supplementing some weeks of bodybuilding to build up strength of individual muscle groups is beneficial. Your shoulders, your back, your legs, and really targeting it. But then also not getting to the point where you're putting on too much size that it affects your cardio. So it's really about balance of cardio and just overall strength and stamina and endurance, more so than it is like a strict set of like style of training you would like to do.
Yeah, I have a buddy who was in the teams, and he said he got through BUDS and then went on this get big quick workout scheme and got, he said he got fucking gigantic and then went out and deployed and was like, this is useless.
This sucks.
All this size sucks. It fucking sucks.
Because now all the stuff I have to carry plus myself.
Yeah. And he said he's like, does a lot of rucking now.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Go ruck is a cool thing, and you can throw a kettlebell, or they make these weird weights that strap in there and you throw it on your back. I like doing that, but there are often times where I get super defeated feeling because I'll put like a 35 pound weight in my backpack and get utterly exhausted on a short walk and go like, dude, at one point I was carrying around 250 extra pounds. And yeah. I don't remember being this tired, like just gassed out.
Yeah. I mean, you pick 35. So 35 pounds is the standard ruck weight, dry, not including water and other stuff you'll carry for all of your ruck events in the military. That's what you do, like a 12-mile ruck. You have to do within 3 hours to be a ranger. And it's 35 pounds and then not including water and stuff. So it ends up getting up to around 50, 60 pounds. But to be honest, nothing, not even carrying around body weight, prepares you for carrying it on your back other than actually doing it, yeah. Right? And it's something that doesn't stay with you. If I try to throw in a 35, 45-pound ruck right now and do 12 miles and my knees would be like, no, and my back would be like, no, and I'd feel defeated, and I'd be like, wow, dude, you've had better days.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's amazing. And in the Rangers, you worked with dogs?
Yeah. So how it works is you go through basic training, AIT, airborne school. Then you go to RASP or RIP, depending on the time frame you're in, which is a ranger selection process. And then after that, you get assigned to one of the three ranger battalions. I went to the first ranger bat. And from there, you're a brand new guy. You get treated pretty poorly, kind of like, you know, I don't want to say hazing because that's not a thing the military does and you can say anymore, but a rite of passage, right? A rite of passage.
You get initiated.
Yeah, you get initiated. That's we'll go with it being initiated. And you do that. And in my time when Afghanistan and stuff was still going on, how it works is you have a 7-month training cycle, 2 weeks of like leave or vacation before and after. And then around a 4-month deployment, the combat deployment. So you pretty much, when you get there, you have to do a full training cycle deployment. They test you. You might not go on any missions at deployment, and just prove yourself to your platoon, to your unit. And then they send you to Ranger School. And Ranger School is a conventional military school. It's a leadership school that anybody in the military can go. But because it's called Ranger School, Rangers have to go, and they're expected to be top of their class, go straight through, hopefully, and go back to their battalion with Ranger qualified. At that point, you do a few more rotations, training cycle deployment, and then you get the ability to go to choose a specialty skill set. So there's a couple specialty skill sets, one being sniper, one being canine or dog. And you can either choose to still be an operator, shooter, or you can, you know, request to go to one of these specialty skill sets, and which is sometimes pretty hard to do because it's very few. I think at the time when I wanted to be a dog handler, we were about 12 to 16 dog handlers. That's it. So very small community and very hard to get into. So I just re-enlisted and say, hey, if you want me still in the unit, I'll re-enlist, but I have to go canine. So that's what I did. And then from there, you go to your handler's course, you get assigned a canine, and then you do a training cycle deployment as a dog handler.
And does that then add a whole other layer of physical necessity? Like whatever you're prepared for initially, you're prepared for, and now you're dealing with a dog.
Yeah. So add a dog, because also, so add a dog into the mix. So if you get the prep for so we mainly did missions going out at night, right? Special operations, really targeted specific individuals, go out at night, kill or capture, return home. So everything was done under night vision. And sometimes you'd have to prepare to stay over day or a rod. So adding a dog under night, and then all the stuff you have to make sure you have in case you stay out there all night, not only for yourself, but for a dog, you add a lot more weight, you add a lot more responsibility, and you add a lot more frustration because you add a dog to the mix who isn't a person. If they're uncomfortable, don't like something,
you can't really tell them to suck it up.
No, exactly. So, and then there is a physical aspect to it, right? So part of the dog handling course is you have to go through obstacle courses with the dog on your back. You have to attach them. You have to attach your leash, your long lead, 30-foot lead, to your dog's vest, hoist them up over things, put them on your back, camera cross obstacles. Because the reality of it is, if that dog gets shot, injured, or anything like that, that's your responsibility to carry your own equipment, everything you're responsible for, plus the canine off target, right? So there, it does add a whole new dynamic to it and a whole new responsibility. A story with that is one mission I was on. It was northern Afghanistan at night, of course, pretty deep snow, about up to the knees. And we're on our way to the objective. And there was a creek, probably about 4 feet, 5 feet wide creek, but it hadn't frozen over. But I couldn't let my dog go through it and get completely soaking wet. And then we could be out there 8, 9, 10 hours and have my dog in trouble, frostbite or anything like that. So I had to grab him and jump across the creek. The issue with that is I didn't consider everything else I was carrying. I was physically able to do that, but my knee cut my cot onto my magazine well, buttstock into my mouth, and almost knocked out my front teeth. And you can't see it because my mustache, but split my lip wide open and still had to be on the mission for the rest of the night. So you're adding a whole nother dynamic of, just like I said, frustration and physical components to that job.
Did they give you stitches in your face in the field?
No, I had to. I just rocked it until I got back.
Wow, Jesus.
Yeah.
That is intense, dude.
Yeah, and I still had to be responsible for my job, which is making sure, leading up front, making sure there's no explosives or anything, or a dog setting off an ambush or anything like that. That's why the dog's always up front. So I still, after that, had a responsibility for the entire night.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Do you ever find that the broader social media platforms are a little bit impersonal? Well, I do too. Sometimes it's hard to cut through all the noise on them. So we've started a Patreon. And it's got all the normal things a Patreon podcast typically has, like bonus ad-free and video episodes. But the part I'm loving the most is the American Glutton Discord channel, which is only available through Patreon. If you want to chat about diets or recipes, workout routines or motivation, it's all happening there. So search up American Glutton on Patreon to join the community today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Growing up as a kid, my mom would never let us have real cereal. When I say real cereal, I mean the stuff that you'd find at a normal grocery store. My mom would get us the cardboard shavings at the health food store, and I was always miserable with my cereal. And then I would magically go to my friend's house, and they would have real cereal. And I would be so envious, and I would sit and eat bowl after bowl of delicious, frosted goodness, sugary, wonderful stuff. And then I grew up and I was able to buy my own cereal, but that lasted all of 2 minutes because then I started dieting, so cereal left my life entirely. Well, not anymore. Not anymore. Now there's Magic Spoon, which is high protein cereal. My favorite flavor is their peanut butter. It's incredible. Variety pack. Four flavors are cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. This pack has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. Only 140 calories a serving. It's high protein, has 0 grams of sugar, keto friendly, gluten free, grain free, and soy free. It's incredible. Go to magicspoon.com/glutton and grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code GLUTTON at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember, start your day off right with a delicious bowl of high-protein cereal at magicspoon.com/glutton and use the code GLUTTON to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
And when did you come back to bodybuilding or physique or that? Was that after the military?
Yeah, Because obviously, like you said, your one of your friends told you putting on a bunch of size is not advantageous for the job, right? So I was sitting around 200, 210 pounds the majority of my military career. I got really into building my physique starting about a year and a half after I got out. Mind you, when I got out of the military, about 4 months later, I signed a contract with Raytheon. And went right back and lived in Afghanistan for 2 years. I lived in Afghanistan for 2 years out of a shipping container. And I trained and ran the Afghan Special Forces selection. And with that, being over there and training them, I still focus a lot of my training around physical performance rather than bodybuilding and physique building. But right towards the end, when I started to phase out from wanting to be in that kind of career field anymore, is really when I started to focus on more of a bodybuilding mindset.
So you were still over there and you began doing that?
Yeah, this is probably 2017. When I was just like, you know what? I'm tired of just doing running, carrying heavy shit and everything like that. I want to like build a physique because I like my appearance and my what I want to look like. This is not what I want to look like. I look good, I'm in shape, but I want to really see if I can push my body to a limit and kind of like, you can never really perfect your body if bodybuilding, but kind of take it to the next level of just, what can I look like? What can I build? How can I just be better all around?
You know, the other and not really argument, but when I talk to obese people who are starting to go into the gym or anything like that, the reason I've settled with that type of workout and enjoy that type of workout is, one, in a caloric deficit, you're going to retain a bunch of muscle mass. You're not, you know, unless you're on some kind of crazy diet, but mostly the intent is to be able to cut fat and retain muscle. So that's great. But number two is, having done a bunch of different types of exercise, the soreness I get from lifting weights in the way that I do is just muscular soreness. I never have
knee pain. I never have lower back pain. I'm not, you know, I've done some 5Ks and my knees are then shot for a week. And I've done box jumps in CrossFit and my knees are shot. And with this kind of lifting, I find like I like the muscle soreness, but it's not like, it doesn't feel like an injury the way my knees sometimes feel sore. You know, does that make sense?
No, that makes complete sense. I couldn't agree more. I've had multiple knee surgeries. I've torn my pec and stuff doing the more of the performance style training. I like the soreness, right? I tell a lot of my clients now, like when they tell, because I always get the comment, oh, you probably don't get sore anymore. You work out all the time. I'm like, every single day, some part on me is sore. And I like it, right? It's like a little badge of achievement that you share with yourself, which you don't really get with a lot of other styles of training, especially like CrossFit and everything, where your badge of honor might be like your elbow and knee hurt for like 3 weeks after you did a bunch of, you know, snatches, right? So bodybuilding, I like the style. I like the way it makes you feel. But it's very, if you do it correctly, it's very humbling. Very humbling going from, I'm a badass. I can do all this other stuff, to bodybuilding, where it's like, no, you're going to grab the 15 pound weight. You're going to concentrate on your bicep. You're not grabbing the 45s. And it hurts worse than a 15, 20 pound weight, more than a 50 pound weight has ever done. Because the style of training, the mind and muscle connection you're doing, it's a humbling, humbling experience, which I didn't realize until I got myself a coach. And he humbled me greatly. Eddie Bracamontes, he's a professional bodybuilder. And he humbled me greatly with showing me this is a completely different style of training and lifestyle. You're not the baddest man in the gym anymore. You're starting from pretty much from scratch with this style of training.
Yeah. I've had comments in the gym where a guy said to me not long ago, like, do you ever work out hard? And I was like, motherfucker, I work out hard every single day, 6 days a week. What are you talking about? And he's like, no, but I mean, like, you're not really lifting heavy. And I said, yeah, no, I don't ever lift heavy because I don't need to, one. And number two, like, if I hurt myself lifting heavy, I'm done. And that's a disaster.
Right. Yeah. Nothing worse than getting injured and like stopping training at this point. My immediate body morphia goes into play. Dysmorphia goes into play. And I miss 2-3 days from the gym because I, you know, messed something up. And I'm immediately like, oh, well, I'm done. I'm backtracked months now. You know, it's you have to keep it going, and an injury is not acceptable. I mean, I do like to lift heavy, especially on legs, but it's very, very long process. Warm up, taking easy, and gradually getting up into the higher weights, just to avoid injury. Because injury, like you said, catastrophic, not just to physique, but to your mindset. At least for me.
Yeah, no, me too. It's not that I'm scared. It's just like, if I can avoid that, like the repercussions from it are so severe, I'm going to avoid that at all costs.
Yeah, exactly. The benefit of just ego lifting it's not there. Right. And you see that a lot, especially in the bodybuilding community. You think, oh, big guy, he lifts the heaviest weight in the world. He's like, no, he concentrates proper form, mind and muscle connection and isolation, and avoids injury and avoids doing the crazy stuff like when I first started off lifting.
Yeah. I have a question about when you started in Afghanistan. Was it easy to eat the way you needed to eat?
Are you talking about deployments in general, or like when I moved over there for a contractor?
Well, I mean, on deployments, if you're not trying, like, just the amount of protein I have to eat every day and right, and making sure that it's leanish protein, right? That's hard. Like when my wife wants to go out to dinner, I'm kind of like, okay, well, just make sure it's a restaurant where I know I can get something to eat at, right? Like I just don't mindlessly do this. But when it's all up to some other organization to feed yeah. you, is it, I mean, I guess if you're in the military, they want you to be pretty fit.
You would think that, right? Okay. So I give you a couple things. My military experience being special operations can be very different than a lot of people who might be listening in the military, conventional military units and stuff like that. I ate very well. Our chow hall on the, you know, our compounds overseas, we got, it was open 24/7, every meal, chicken breasts, there's steaks, there's like, I ate well. And if you wanted food, you can take to-go plates, whatever you want, unlimited. A lot of the conventional military does not get that option, especially overseas. They're limited to one protein source, one carb, blah, blah. And it's funny, what they're unlimited access to is sweets, which is kind of crazy. They have unlimited access to sweets. But, you know, budgeting wise, you get one of this, one of this, one of this. And of course, you get packages sent over with protein powder and stuff like that. But as far as my military experience is, I got to eat whatever I wanted when I was over there. And it was pretty lean, which is the benefit of obviously being one of the benefits of being special operations. And I ate probably leaner and better when I was deployed than when I was back home in the States.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, there's no, you're not going to the bars. You're not going to restaurants. You're not going, there's none of that outside influences. All right. Well, I have these options. There's always chicken breast. It's always a good source of protein. Always rice. Always something you need. Your typical bodybuilding diet, your typical healthy diet. You have those options. At least I did. And you don't have the outside influence of, let's just go to a restaurant or screw it, let's just order food. No, you're there. And it was actually a time where you saw guys' physiques really, really improve for that reason. Because honestly, a range of training cycle is super taxing and you don't really get a lot of like personal social time. And so when you do, you get done with like a 3-week training, like FTI, an exercise, a 3-week training exercise. And the last thing you want to do is sit there and just eat chicken breast and rice. You're like, I'm going to go to the bar. I'm going to drink my face off and I'm going to eat cheeseburgers and stuff. And then deployment comes and you get to kind of straighten that all up and not have the outside influence. So that's kind of how it was in at least our community.
Yeah. And. How long did it take when you started to work with heavy weights on your back and just like that kind of movement? What was the adjustment time? Because I imagine putting in excess fuel for that just because it's new and your body's right. probably screaming for it. But did it take a long time to just get accustomed to that?
Yeah. So going in. I mean, I was going from Colorado to Georgia. So the benefit of elevation change was very realistic. And I noticed that with my cardio and performance. But the transition everything I did was just so foreign and stuff I've never really done before. And it's honestly to get used to it. It was so mental more than it was anything like physical performance. It was like, this is going to be extremely uncomfortable. It's not going to feel good. But for me and a lot of other, there's just no other option to just not quit, right? No matter how it feels, no matter if it feels like your back's going to explode, your knee's going to explode. It's for a lot of us, it's like, just do it. And until you get good at it, fake it until you make it almost. And that's kind of how it was. Like, I never rucked before I went in. You know, I trained, I did cardio, I did all this stuff. But the minute they're like, this is what you're doing. And I was like, okay. And to me at the time, it's like, oh, 35 pounds, 45, 55, 60 pounds. That doesn't seem like a lot, especially when you start off bodybuilding. Like, oh, I squat this, hundreds, all this stuff. This doesn't seem like it's going to be that difficult. You move, you get a time frame of having to complete a movement with that on your back. And about 2 miles in, you're like, oh, this is horrible, and I've never prepared for anything like this before. And the only way to do it is to actually ruck and put weights on your back and move.
Yeah, man. Fuck, 12 miles in 3 hours with 35 pounds. That sounds like
and
torture.
That's 35 pounds dry. So you're not including your water and everything like that. You're pushing 50, 60 pounds at the end of it. Right. And with your weapon and everything else, that's just what your pack is.
Oh my God. That's insane, dude.
Yeah.
All right. So then you start getting back into bodybuilding in Afghanistan.
Yes.
And at that point, you're not in the special forces mess hall. Was it hard to eat then?
Okay. So I was, I went over there. I was, working directly with the guys I just left. So the special forces, the Rangers, SEAL community was still where I was at. Right. I was just hired as civilian sector to kind of keep continuity year round. This is how we run the selection for the Afghan special forces. This is how we do the train up. So that's why they went to a civilian sector to kind of run that. So that as those 4 month deployments go on year round, they come in. It's like nothing changes. They're not starting anything up. It was a lot easier of a process than having a military guy there for 4 months. Running it and then gone and putting somebody else new, somebody who was there pretty much year round, so that as the military came in to help with the training and the selection process, that there was this continuity and it was routine and it wasn't. But I was still at the same chow hall, still eating great, and still at the best gym facility probably in the area, because that's something that they're not cheap with, right? They put a lot of money into making sure there's good equipment there for their guys to stay fit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if they've invested however much, I think it's a very expensive process in creating one of those type of operators. They want to,
Depending on investment. It's easy into the six figures, right? Easy.
Yeah.
And that's not even including the equipment and everything else. It's just the training. High six figures if you're going through a full training cycle deployment and everything like that.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. In an attempt to create more of a community, we are branching out and taking our Q&A episodes and the American Glutton Social Club to Patreon. We're inviting you to join us on Patreon to have more interaction, less of me talking at you and more of me talking with you. The bonus content will start rolling out February 10th, but you don't have to wait. You can join today for extra episodes, discounts, and so much more, like the Patreon-only Discord, which is already up and the conversations there have begun. So go find me at American Glutton on Patreon. Okay, so then you're done with that and you come back and you're a personal trainer now.
Yeah, so I realized that I like to train people, right? I was like, oh, I like training Afghans. I was starting to train other service members when I was over there, and I started really liking it. I mean, this is something I'm passionate about. So I moved back to Colorado. I had a house in the suburbs, and I was like, this is not where I want to be. The fitness industry, I knew that's what I wanted to get into. It wasn't really the community. It wasn't advantageous for building a coaching and personal training business. So I was like, Southern California, everybody likes to be fit there. The mother of my child, we didn't have a child yet. This part of the story is we're like, let's downsize. Let's move to San Diego. Let's become personal trainers, finish college, use my benefits to still go to college and just live that lifestyle. Month after we moved here, sold a big suburban house. A month after we moved here to a one-bedroom apartment, she got pregnant. Of course, it's how life works. It's like when you least expect anything to happen, that's when it happens. But yeah, I got into the personal training field here, and it's huge here, right? The fitness industry is huge in Southern California, LA, San Diego. It's very competitive. And I realized that I can't, just because of my background, I can't just start my own business. I don't know anybody out here. So what I did is I found a commercial gym, a Crunch Fitness, in Pacific Beach in San Diego. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to hustle as hard as I can and try to get as many clients as I can. And, eventually do my own thing. And that's what I did. I worked 7 days a week for months, just nonstop trying to establish clients. And it wasn't the style of training I thought I was going to be doing. Let's just say it's not a whole lot of serious bodybuilding at a commercial gym like that, especially in Pacific Beach, if you're familiar with that in San Diego, I became the guy who just built women's butts.
It's a very valuable thing. Yeah.
It's a very valuable thing, right? When my friends come and visit me, they're like checking out girls. I just look at them and I say, you're welcome. And I'm like, right, yeah, one of my clients. But it was just special operations, private military contracting, all this stuff. And then I'm in Pacific Beach, 95% of my clients are women. I'm building butts all day, every day. And I'm like, okay, so this is kind of like where I ended up, and which is nothing bad, right? I enjoy what I do, made a lot of good clients, had a lot of, made a lot of friends from it. But I realized that, you know, I got to pull some clients and I got to do more of what I really want to do. So after about a year and a half, 2 years, about a year and a half at Crunch, I was like, this is my chance. Like, I have to go now. Like, I have clients. I can't wait forever. And I took my business to the gym. The name of the gym is The Gym, which is annoying to tell people, with, that allows you to train out of the facility without having to pay them anything. So then I just brought all my clients there. I started reaching out online and finding online clients, mainly targeting people who wanted to be special operations. And I started to do bodybuilding and butt building in person. And then really branching out online to, you know, kids and guys who want to do special operations and doing online programming for them.
Oh, that's really cool. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Is it, are you having dudes, young dudes do a lot of rucking?
Yes and no. Right. So,
I mean, I guess the question to precede that is that a big part of, the initial test, physical testing that you have to go through just to get into those departments?
Yeah. So to be in any special operation, you have to be good at wrestling, right? You have to be good at carrying heavy weight. Depending on the age and the experience level of one of those clients is how I judge when I'm going to have them start doing it. I'm not going to tell a 16-year-old kid, load up your backpack with 50 pounds of weight and go move over like terrain, right? That's not going to be good for that person. They could get injured. So it is a process to get them to that point. I built like a week long. Their first week is like a kind of an assessment. I sit down with them, have a consultation, give them their week long assessment, which is strength assessment, endurance, cardio, everything, kind of see where they're at, and then build custom tailored week to week programs. So none of mine, nothing I do is like, oh, here's 12 weeks, run with it. Every single person is different. They're going to develop differently just based on experience, their physiques, their experience, everything. So each week I'll sit down on Sundays and I have Zoom meetings, Zoom consultations, get their numbers from how they did. And then that night, rebuild them in their following week and get them to that point. So some people can start rucking and everything within a month. Some people, I don't have to do that at all because their experience level is so little. They're stabilizing muscles throughout their knees and everything aren't built up yet. They're starting from scratch. So it's a longer process. I'm with them like 2-3 months. And then we really can start getting into it. Because the biggest thing you don't want to happen is being ready mentally and pretty much physically and going into a selection and then getting hurt, when you can actually prepare better for that. So that's kind of what I do, is a healthy way for them to train for the longevity of their, you know, their careers that they want.
Well, yeah. I mean, you also, you don't want to go into that exhausted either.
Right.
Like there's a whole lot to that. I want to ask if your ideal, and obviously I understand there's guys like, Tiger Woods, who trained to be a golfer from the time he was like 2 years old or something like that, whatever. Okay. But like, not that, but if you had a young person, early teens, what amount of time would be ideal for you to set them up, and not somebody who's battling something like obesity or already has the scale tipped in the opposite direction, but how long would it be for you that you would go like, the ideal amount of time to prepare somebody for this is X?
Okay. So let's just say a standard, like 17-year-old kid, he's going into his spring semester of senior of high school. He's like, hey, I want to join the military. I would realistically be set that out, average kid, probably about, you know, 4 to 6 months of realistic time frame. And that's honestly, a lot of that big portion is mental. Can you go through a 6 month program and not, there's a point where you give up, you start lacking. I see in your numbers that they start coming down, what's happening, outside influence, because none of that stuff, that all that stuff's still going to be factored into when you're in a selection. So I also help with the mental component of that. So kind of, I would say average is like 4 to 6 months, just because like I like assessing, like, is there going to be a give point where this person's like, all right, 3 months in, like, and their numbers start to go down. I can kind of tell like they're not as motivated. Then it could take a little bit longer of a process, just because you don't want that to happen when you go into a selection. So I'd say 4 months for the people who are like gung ho, let's do this, and like fully committed, and then upwards of 6 months for like the kids who are like, you know, they get distracted, they get detours, they lose motivation, and that takes a little bit longer, because I really got to try to also work with the mentality of it, is that you can't, this can't happen while you're in. Right. Like, stop. And even when you get to your special operations unit, it's a lot of times harder to stay in it, because now you're not just around the guys through a selection who are trying to get in. You're around the guys who completed it and are in and are the peak of their physical performance. And that's what you have to keep up with. So building that mentality is probably the hardest part. Say, oh yeah, these kids go through these workouts, but I'll do stuff like mock hell week and stuff. Like workouts that really just put mental stress on them. And then the next week, see how, give them a week that they had previously done and see if they're just unmotivated through it. And then kind of like have that as a talking point. It's like, listen, you did great 3 weeks ago when you did this, these sets of exercises, and now you're not. What happened the previous week that kind of defeat you? Because obviously this is mental, it's not physical at this point. So it's like, it's a whole thing, and every single person is different. And it's up to me to kind of monitor, you know, the numbers. I'm not just looking at strength and everything increase. If their strengths increase or their endurance is increasing, but really, is their mindset ready? Because at the end of the day, Ethan, that's what's going to get you through. It's not your physical fitness. It's your ability to just put your head down and keep moving no matter the physical exertion that you've put out.
And look, I think we're talking about something that is really intense, and maybe just like an extreme version of like how one could think about life. Very hard, very difficult, takes a lot of focus, takes a lot of mental fortitude, and there's a physical component. But I think that this is a good simile for just anybody dealing with weight loss or obesity or who's struggled with that. There's going to be those aspects too. Like, I'm thinking about a kid who's wants to go into special operations, which to me is the most physically demanding thing I could ever comprehend. And if the kid's like more interested in going to the movies or going to Coachella and can't get his, like, that might be something you have to think about. And likewise, if you've spent your life eating in a certain way and being immobile in a certain way, and you want to get out of that, it might take a little bit more mental fortitude than you're accustomed to giving.
Right, exactly. And what's kind of interesting that you bring that up is, honestly, the kids, the guys I've worked with who are heavy set, started off heavy set, and they, like 9 times out of 10, are the ones I actually deal with the mental strength loss the least. Like, they go into it, they start seeing results fat loss wise with the end goal being special operations, and they hunker down. They're like, this is it. This is not just helping me physically, this is helping me mentally. Like, I'm feeling more mentally confident. I'm being able to complete these things that this guy's giving me, that into these intense things. I'm feeling better. I'm looking better. My mentality of like how I perceive myself is going up. So that's kind of a crazy correlation. I actually really haven't thought of until you just brought it up. But the kids that always, like, the more fit kids that kind of always had it, like, you know, more or less, like, easier, you know, whether that be more genetically inclined or just grew up with a healthier habits, they're more likely 3-4 months into it to teeter off than the kids that, you know, the heavier set kids, the kids battling obesity. That's an interesting correlation you brought up, because I've never thought about it until now, but it's almost like they've dealt with a lot of, like, physical hardships, which affect your mentality, just like being overweight, the stigma around it. And they're like, they see this progress and they see an end goal of being this elite member of the military and of American society. And they're just like, you know what? I'm going to push through this. This is helping me in so many other ways than I actually expected.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Gals, have you ever seen a professional bodybuilder at the gym? They almost always, and this is in fair or foul weather, come in wearing at least one sweatshirt. Usually the hood is pulled up, and oftentimes there's a towel crammed in there to keep even the slightest breeze off their necks. And when the sweatshirt comes off, watch out for the ubiquitous tank top underneath. Well, you know where you can get sweatshirts, gym towels, and tank tops? The American Glutton Store, that's where. And fellas, don't think we've left you out. We've got windbreakers for the real savages. Anyone working out in a windbreaker has unlocked legend status in my book. And if your feet get cold when you're wearing shoes, we've got socks too. Visit AmericanGlutton.net/shop today and level up your gym game. That's AmericanGlutton.net/shop.
Yeah, I mean, look, anecdotally, and I don't know all of the psychology connected to this, but for me, I've done some diets, dude, where it's like literally 500 calories a day. As long as I'm seeing weight loss, I am fucking gung-ho. I'm going to do it. You cannot stop me. But right. Then once the weight loss is over, what am I? There's the motivation. That's that carrot or stick, whatever it is. This constant reward of weight loss is over now. And suddenly it's like, look, I know that Kit Kats are going to potentially make me gain weight, but I'm not losing weight now anyways. So all the bad habits start to come back. But I think when you have that momentum, especially for people with weight loss, just seeing that is an extra motivator.
It's a huge extra motivator. And then, like you're saying, when you've lost the weight and like, where's the motivation come from then? Going back is like, those kids are now like, now special operations is for me. I have one step after another. This is what I want to do. I got to my target weight. I'm passing all the physical expectations that they're going to be required for me in whatever special operations unit I want to go into. Now I got to get there. So it's constant motivation. And that's why I really believe that. That's why 9 times out of 10, and my clients who are battling with obesity and fat loss, first and foremost, are honestly just mentally doing a little bit better than the other people. I think this is a constant, they're seeing constant goal after goal. And like the more fit people that I have trained, it's just like, okay, I can do these. This is getting harder. This is getting harder. Do I really want this? I'm not really seeing physical like gains at this point. It's kind of getting a little bit of a plateau state where I'm really like, I look the same. Yeah, my run time's getting better, but who cares about that? And all those things, they're not seeing like a huge physical change, because with this style of training, you really don't see huge physical changes like you do in bodybuilding. So, but for somebody who has a lot of fat to lose, cardio, moving heavy weight, all like carrying heavy weight, you see a fat loss quickly, right? So I think that's interesting that mentality and that seeing those results just carries them through. And honestly, pretty successful with my programs.
Yeah. I personally am a big, like the idea that has kind of come to me later, but when I think back through all of my failures, I think that for the most part,
I just wasn't clear enough with myself about what my goals were. So I go like, I just need to lose weight. Like, right. That's the thought. Just need to lose weight. And fine. That's maybe true, but I'm not thinking through my long-term goal of like keeping the weight off and what am I going to do and what's my plan going to be? And am I thinking long-term? Whereas like, I think of a guy who's overweight, who wants to go into military, that's a feat in and of itself. And that's going to produce constant motivation. And then once they get there, the idea of staying in the military has some requirements too. But a guy who's lean and fit, who should be thinking, I need like the sub goals are, I'm going to increase my run. Like I need to work towards that, right? So that it becomes enough of a motivating factor right. to keep going.
But those aren't fun goals. Like, there's not fun goals. Like, it's not like, oh, I'm hitting 500 pounds on squats, or, you know, my arms are getting bigger, the shirts are fitting better, my pants are fitting better. Those are fun goals, right? Those are goals like, oh, I'm going to look great for summertime. Those are fun goals. For a guy who looks physically fit, knocking 3 minutes off the runtime, that's it. There's no visible reward. It becomes a little bit more difficult. You have to be okay with internal gratification rather than outside gratification. Because somebody with fat loss, you're going to hear about it, right? You're going to have people coming up to you. You're going to have people telling you, you look good, this, that, and the other. With the more fit guy, increasing his runtime, there is not that. You have to be internally motivated and internally okay with just your own success without the outside like rewards or people boosting you up for accomplishing that, which people with weight loss often get.
Yeah. Well, no. And for me today, that's a factor because like maintenance and maintaining my weight, there's really nothing fun about that other than the fact that I go, shit, I made it through another day having eaten what I planned to eat today. That's a big deal. I'm going to pat myself on the back. But, you know, years into that, when I'm still running a cycle, basically that's the formula. There are times where I have to sit back and go, think about 20 years from now. How do I get there? It's this kind of thing, putting together way more days like this than the other way.
Can I ask how you got to that mindset? Did you hire coaches? Did you hire trainers? Or did you kind of come up with that mindset on your own?
I just failed so many times. And there were so many times where I would wake up fat again and not understand what happened. Go like, I was killing it at weight loss. It was hard, but like, I did it, you know, 2 months on liquid diet, which was like 600 calories a day. And then other periods where it'd be like 45 or 80 days of 500 calories a day and getting the weight off and then going like, well, that's it. And then waking up a year later, having gained 100 pounds and going like, what's the fucking problem here?
Right.
And the problem was, I just thought it was weight loss, and that's not really my issue because I have no problem losing weight at all. I have real tough time maintaining weight. That's like my lifelong battle, really, is just like, how much fuel does my body need? Don't eat anymore, period. That's it.
Have you ever thought about getting an outside person to help you with that and keep you on track? Or have you always felt like you need to do this kind of a thing on your own?
I've just been successful now for so many years that I'm like, I don't feel like I need anybody at this point. And talking to you and talking to other people is like basically my therapy.
You get to do it kind of often, right?
Yeah. But I would say for somebody who's not having these conversations a lot, talking to somebody is super beneficial.
Right. So for me, I didn't realize it until getting out of the military. The military, again, like you said, you're having conversations. Content, you're having conversations. You're talking, you're around like-minded people that physical fitness is something very important. Keeping the weight off, maintaining, all that is very important. When I left that, and I kind of did my own thing, like you said, moved to San Diego and everything, I didn't have those people around me necessarily. I had club gym people, my clients who I was helping, but I didn't have the biggest, baddest ass person above me or around me keeping me going, right? And I realized I was lacking that. And for me, and I think quite a bit of other people, I needed, and I still need, that outside voice, outside opinion, that outside push to really keep me, staying focused on my ultimate goals, which is eventually to do competition and stuff and just maintaining it as I get older. And so for me, that's why I'm a coach. I hired a coach. My coach is a coach. It's just that community that I actually didn't realize how much I needed. And so I left the military, spent about a year and a half doing my own thing. And I was like, dude, I'm plateaued. Like, I'm at 220 pounds. My physique's not changing. I'm here. What's going on for me? Like, I've always been pushing myself to the next level. And I kind of realized, because dog eat dog world with the community that I was from, I was lacking that. I wasn't having these conversations regularly. I was the person influencing others, but I had nobody influencing me. And that's again, going back to the humble thing, so I had to humble myself. This is not the same world I am coming from. This is a new world where I don't have the outside influence that I'm used to. And one of the most nervous things I feel like I've ever done, which is crazy, is reaching out to another human being, another man, and be like, yo, man, I need help with me, which is like, for me, which is very difficult, right? And like I said, my coach, Eddie Bracamontes, amazing guy. I've been with him for a year now, learning so much from him, taking me to the next level, but he's that outside influence now. He's that guy who's like, who has the eye that I don't have when I look in the mirror. Right. Yeah. He's the one, hey, this is what you need to do. He's the one that I do check-ins with every week. And throughout the week, I'm like, when I want to cheat, when I want to drink, when I want to do this, and just like my clients with the outside and bad influences, I have to report to him on Sunday. Right. I can't report to him 3 pounds heavier with fat. I can't report to him with no progression. So I kind of was the person, I need that outside influence. Just like my clients need that with me. And, it was very humbling. And, one of a really great decision ultimately, because I went from 220, 230 pounds and in a year got up to around 245, 250, because I was locked in. And I was locked in because I had that support system that I was so accustomed to in the military.
Yeah, no, I think that's really smart. And I think my sobriety works very much in that way, right? I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. I have people that I sponsor. And I think in that way, it's like I'm the guy that gets a call from some people who are like, I'm having a really tough day. I'm thinking about drinking. And we have a conversation. I have to put on a completely different hat. I have to be like, oh, I am here for you, right? But then I need that sometimes too. And then the guy that I turn to, who then he puts on his hat and he goes, I'm here for you. We're going to figure this out. He needs that too. So I think it's very smart to do it that way too. I'm actually surprised. I just don't know about communicating. I guess my wife is really the person who I'm like, listen, I want to go to McDonald's. And she's like, shut up, lard ass, or something like that. You know what I mean? I wonder who she's talking to. She probably has a friend.
I wonder if she needs somebody too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fun. I just realized that's something that I've always needed. And to take my military, like, 'cause I was so used to being an aggressive person, and just focusing that military aggression, that strength, that alpha male mentality, and give me direction, right? I have the drive. I just need, just having that support system, having that person there that I do not want to disappoint, who's taking hours a week with me out of his time to help me. And having that, like, I can't check in on Sunday and regress. And yeah. That's And that's honestly the industry I'm in. And that's what helps a lot of my clients.
Yeah, that's amazing. Okay, I have one more question for you.
Yeah.
What is the ideal time to build a woman's butt?
The ideal time?
Like how we talked about 4 to 6 months for a kid going into the military. Like if you had to say to somebody, and again, we'll just take an average American woman and she comes into the gym, what time? I mean, I think it's got to be longer than 4 to 6 months, right?
Oh, yeah. You're talking like, so obviously the girls want big butts. That's like what's in. When we were younger, the slim Paris Hilton pants falling off thing was in. That is not the thing anymore. So every girl, especially in this community, wants a bigger butt. First thing I tell them is like, you're not going to be happy with how much food you have to eat, right? Not, like putting size on your butt, you have to think about like most people, like 10, 15 pounds to grow your butt. That's actual size. And that's just in that area. You're talking about a year, 2 years, 3 years. It's going to be a constant journey, right? Because you have to be eating a lot to put muscle on in the glutes and legs, which are such large muscle groups. That is actually the hardest talk that I have with my female clients who want that is you're definitely not eating enough. And living in San Diego where it's gorgeous, 10 months out of the year, they don't want to put on extra weight. So I'd have to say that is an ongoing process. I don't have the answer for you because I'm still building those girls' butts to this day. They look better. But again, it's one of those things where they're never going to be perfect. It's never going to be something they're satisfied with. So it's just an ongoing thing. And food is the big contributing factor to that.
For some reason, it really tickles me, this idea, because like I get panicked if I have to miss a day at the gym and I'm like, my pecs are going to deflate and my biceps are going to deflate and like this. And I think it's hilarious if there's a gal out there who's like, I got to get to the gym. My butt's going to deflate, you know?
One of my female clients, every single one is like, oh my God, it's gone away. I'm like, nope. It's been 5 days. You're okay. Like it's everybody has a mentality, whether it's on your arms or chest or girls' butt.
Yeah. I will say I am a big fan of straight leg deadlifts. They're my favorite deadlifts. I'm not really great at deficit straight leg deadlifts, but I've seen some gals do deficit straight leg deadlifts where I'm like, I didn't know the human body could do that. Back perfectly straight. And they're somehow like way below parallel. And I'm like, I don't understand how these two things are happening at the same time. It's wild.
Because they're thinking about that butt.
Right.
Their back can't bend. That weight has to be heavy. Sorry, my butt has to look good tonight.
Yeah. Meanwhile, when I do it, I'm just thinking about my hamstrings. And they're
between them and you is because you're not thinking about your ass the entire time.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to maybe change that and try them.
Why don't you just build that butt?
Amazing. Trey, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Ethan. I really have fun.
Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee, and as always, joined by my chaperone, Paige Dorian. Follow us on Instagram at American Glutton Podcast. Sincerely.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.